We can't take calls. The board, the monitor wasn't working, and it's been humming. And for telephone calls, what looks like a conspiracy, it was real loud. And I can try it if you want, but I think you'll hear the noise. We'll give it a try. I don't think the telephone part is going to work tonight. When I take the phone off the hook, there's this loud hum. And I don't think you want to hear that on the air. There's something wrong with the main part of the machine, the monitor here. So what we'll do is just share a little extra information before I begin World Watchers at 8 o'clock from 8 to 9. I brought in a lot of articles and save your questions for next week, okay? And then we'll get caught up. We have a half hour to get caught up next week. But at first, the machine wasn't working at all when I came in. I just sort of punched some buttons and hit the right button. So the program can go on as usual. We were having trouble in the room with the main mic with a loud hum, but it seems to be okay. Last week I did get a call. Oh, take it back. The hum's back. We'll keep going as long as we can. If the hum interrupts, we'll just stop, turn the machine off, and start over. As I say, we're having trouble with the board here with the stereo monitor. So the main mic wasn't working a few minutes ago when I came in the studio. So with luck, maybe we can do an hour and a half program this evening. I did get a call last week. Asked me about Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence. When did he leave the Gehlen organization? Gehlen was in charge of the armies of the East, and he had agents in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe and all over the world. So in August of 26, 1945, Reinhard Gehlen was flown to the United States to the Pentagon. He'd been working with Alan Dulles of the OSS and was taken to the Pentagon. July the 12th, 1946, was the formal beginning of the Gehlen organization, where Hitler's chief of intelligence was again to set up the intelligence for all of Germany, this time. May the 1st, 1947, the United States gave him $3 million to set up his compound in Pulak, Germany, his headquarters for Gehlen, the construction. And in 1950, he was well into escalating the Cold War with his agents in Asia, Southeast Asia, Korea, and in the United States and in Germany. And he resigned. Gehlen worked straight through with the top Nazis that were supposed to be processed as war criminals, and with Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and so forth. And he retired in May 1968 after Martin Luther King was murdered and Robert Kennedy was murdered in June. But in between that time period in May, he went into retirement, and his successor was General Gerhard Wessel, W-E-S-S-E-L, who took over the Gehlen operation. He was always wanted by the Soviet Union for the war criminal that he was and for the things that he did during the war and rearming Germany after the first war. Hell, he was a young person then. But he was succeeded by another team. It's a large group, the Gehlen Organization. And then he sold the rights to his memoirs in 1971 for $1 million. And there is a very good book with a chronology of his life on some of his experiences. And so he phased out in 1968, and in 1971 he wrote his memoirs. He kept very active, and he worked with the East German and Asian and African Gehlen agents, and he had them stationed all over the world and in various countries and cells in the world, even in the United States. And of course, in the United States, I first hit upon Reinhard Gehlen when I was working on the Kennedy assassination, because everyone in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or in New Orleans or Mexico that Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina knew seemed to be linked into a high United States German espionage agency. And it wasn't long after Kennedy was murdered and the Warren Commission hearings came out that I began my research and came right into the Gehlen organization. And of course, Alan Dulles, who was on the Warren Commission, and John McCloy of the Warren Commission were the ones that brought him to the United States and then set up the network of Nazis after the war. In the book Gehlen, Spy of the Century by Kukerich, it gives a diagram of where his offices were. He worked with NATO. He worked with the German Republic. He had agents in the Soviet Union and Poland, Czechoslovakia, other East Bloc countries, the Middle East. The Middle East is just a name for a place where Otto Skorzeny and Gehlen's top agents set up Sadat, Gaddafi, and Nasser, and the Nazification of the Middle East continued with the Galen agents. They mentioned Latin America. Well, there is Chile and Argentine and Bolivia and Paraguay and Uruguay and Brazil and so forth, Peru, Galen agents in all of those countries, and we'll talk more about that in about 25 minutes on World Watchers. Western Europe, that's a block of places where Galen had agents. He had them in every single country. Southern Europe, Northern Europe, North America. And North America means from California to New York and from up the border of Canada down to Central America. And radio equipment, photographic equipment, laboratories, printers, teleprinters, bugging equipment, counter-bugging equipment, chemical laboratories, and so forth. Galen had departments of finance and special training and security and guards and couriers and public relations and press departments. It was the network of Hitler's entire intelligence operation combined with what our OSS had with William Donovan and with Alan Dulles, who was in the OSS, and I call that the marriage of the German intelligence and the German Nazi network to the United States. And what we see now in all these various countries is the product of that particular marriage. One example of that that was in the news today is an article about the group, the rock group KISS. I'm not particularly, they're not one of my favorites. I like music, but KISS isn't one of my favorite groups. But they had scheduled a concert down in Buenos Aires in Argentina, and the tour was called off. They were supposed to be there August 19th, 20th, and 21st, and they were told they would be killed if they played there. And an organization called the Nationalist Free Fatherland Command said that they don't want any degenerate Anglo-Yankees there, and the communiques were printed, God and the Fatherland or death. This you'll see more and more in every country, and even in the United States, as this disease grows and spreads. Each person can say, well, that's not me, that's over in Argentina, and that's the same country that we're sending ovens built in Florida to that would take 300 to 400 people a day. And their disease, this fascism, will spread. And so this week it's KISS, and soon it'll be some other mild group and Joni Mitchell or someone else. And anyone who threatens to go down there and to entertain them will be killed, and God and Fatherland is the story. I'll briefly run down a few of the news stories that I took note of this week that I will not be putting on World Watchers, maybe later, but I'll share them with you in this time because, as I say, we can't take calls because the monitor system is broken. In case you just tuned in, it's Mae Brussel. We usually have a half hour of calls. We can't take them tonight because the stereo monitor is broken and you'll get a loud hum. In the first place, this Marvin Pancoast went to court and pleaded innocent by reason of insanity. He's the one that killed Vicky Morgan. This fellow had links to the agency that carried her book or was supposed to carry her book, to people in the intelligence community like Mr. Bloomingdale, Alfred Bloomingdale. He evidently procured people, as one woman said, for videotapes and movies and sex parties. This Pancoast has a history that we're not aware of. They haven't told us whether he was in the Army, where he was trained, trained to kill with a baseball bat. It doesn't take much sophistication, but to get out of it and have the high-powered lawyers is pretty good. So he'll plead insanity and waive his rights, evidently, rather than have a trial. And then maybe he'll go off to Ireland and join Dan White on one of Otto Skorzeny's 76 mansions that he left and be safe and wealthy and become a farmer gentleman later. Marvin Pancoast pleading innocent. Incidentally, that murder of Vicky Morgan was so shocking with the baseball bat. There's a new way to die in England suggested in case of a nuclear war that is even less sophisticated. Would you believe this? The San Jose Mercury this week had a story August the 13th. Dr. Barney Williams, a scientist, a medical doctor in England, said that there are not enough drugs stockpiled in the event of a nuclear war, so he recommended death by being hit over the head with a large stone. So you get yourself a rock. People in big cities will have the disadvantage. We country folk can get some rocks right out of our garden, But the recommendation for dying is hit over the head with a large stone, and you take turns, I guess, killing each other off, and we're right back to the Jonestowns, or Ronald Reagan was talking about a club, the men with their clubs, and so forth. We're really getting down to the dark, dark ages, the early kind of operation killing with a large stone. Did I say Jonestown? I didn't mean Jonestown. That was the cyanide. That was the German way of death. I was thinking of the cartoon of the Flintstones. That's the way, hit over the head with a large stone. So by 1983, this is the recommendation. We'll put the United States nuclear missiles in Europe and in England, and if there's an accident or it spills or we have a nuclear war, hit the person around you or yourself over the head with a large stone. I'm always talking about missing money. The secret to what's going on are the huge amounts of missing money, and where did they go? Out of various banks that collapsed, the loans without collateral, the money leaving this country because we're being drained, just as Germany and Japan were after the last war, and it was salted away in Swiss banks and other banks for the fascist element to use it, while we bankrupted ourselves building up the nations. Now, there was a armored courier robbery last December the 12th in New York. They have one suspect, $11 million robbery. They've picked him up. So far, they only can find 200,000 out of the 11 million. So we'll watch and see what his connections were. This fellow is Mike Venerius from Hackensack, New Jersey. The connection to Otto Skorzeny and the great train robbery in England is an example where the fellows escaped and went down to Brazil and bragged that the money was for Nazi organizations. And also in Nice, where the safe deposits were emptied and there were these moles in the bank taking millions of dollars out, and it was given to Nazi organizations. And when I read books and documents about the people doing the robberies, I became more aware of missing millions and billions. And as a matter of fact, Fortune magazine has an article this month. It's just a couple of pages. You can copy it or get it at the library. August 1983 on the missing millions and billions. And a friend who takes these broadcasts, subscribes to them in Texas, is a bank president, and he's always interested in my discussion of the collapse of these banks and the missing money. And he sent me the Fortune article and put MV, he always notes stuff for Mae Brussel to send, and said they should ask her about where the money is, because from time to time, I haven't updated it, but I'll have to update one whole evening maybe on the missing millions and billions and chart that out for you. There was a controversy about spraying paraquate down in Atlanta, Georgia, but they went ahead to do it. This is a deadly killer in the San Jose Mercury, and an article, it can cause severe respiratory ailments, including deaths. Now, I'm absolutely convinced that there are chemicals being used on various races and groups to cause diseases for specific alteration or discomfort or murder, just as the AIDS is a spinoff of the swine flu down in Haiti that they were using on the Cubans and the crops, and they're trying to blame it coming in from Haiti where we use these chemicals. And now the homosexuals, the gays are singled out, or particularly are singled out with AIDS, and then the heterosexuals are afraid to be with them, and the coroners are afraid, and the doctors and the nurses, and even the bus drivers in San Francisco, it becomes like leprosy to be around somebody who has AIDS. Well, the federal government under Jimmy Carter and Dr. Peter Byrne paid millions of dollars. You remember the $43 million they paid to Mexico to allow Dow Chemical to spray paraquate on marijuana. So if you read about the counterculture having a lot of cancer in the next 5 or 10 years, that is when it would take. Not the day they spray it, but it takes and you have cancer a while later. The Tay-Sachs is an example of what I think is identified with the Jewish people. I might have mentioned it on the air. I got a letter once from Fort Ord. I should come in and get a test for Tay-Sachs disease. For the blacks, it's sickle cell anemia. And under the guise of protecting you, you can be injected with the potential for disease, and they come back later and say, oh, you had a slight tendency towards it, and the next children will have sickle cell anemia. The swine flu was a tested at Fort Dix at the Army, and there never was swine flu in this country. As long as we have those chemical compounds being put together in Atlanta, Georgia, we're going to have diseases spread, and there's segments of the population being singled out. The Legionnaires' disease was in Pennsylvania at the hotel, and there was controversy about who owned the hotel, how they lost the holdings after this particular thing happened. It was sold out from under them, and you hardly hear about Legionnaires' disease, even though the CIA was buying the plans for the hotels at Miami at the time of the conventions in 1972, and James McCord or other defendants said that they could put chemicals into the air conditioning system that would affect people. So right now, they're talking about maybe spraying California to put paraquat into the marijuana. Now, it isn't that this government doesn't want marijuana, because we're importing hashish from the Jamiles and from Israel, from the Middle East, from Lebanon and Pakistan and Iran. We're not against narcotics in this country, but it targets a certain segment of the population, and the paraquat can be fatal later. So Atlanta, Georgia is spraying this with the knowledge in the newspaper that the deadly killer causes severe respiratory ailments. I often run down the single diseases that affect segments of our population and repeat this from time to time on the air, because a lot of people are not aware that segments of the population have been targeted and identified, and that these diseases are hitting those particular people. I will upgrade the Carter-Reagan papers. I haven't done much on that. I've saved a lot on Representative Al Basta. He now wants to see the papers of William Casey, James Baker, David Gergen, the assistant to the president for communications, Francis Hodsall, H-O-D-S-O-L-L, chairman for the National Endowment for Arts, and Robert Gray. Now, Robert Gray worked with Edwin Wilson with Task Force 157 with the CIA, and he was suspected right away of being responsible for stealing papers of Jimmy Carter to help Ronald Reagan, and then he's working with a position with Ronald Reagan at the present time. He has a public relations firm in Washington. They've asked for information on these people. This is a bigger story than most people realize, and the invasion of Chad or Honduras or the troubled Lebanon takes away from the involvement of this story. But the crux of the paper story is that a lot of people never believed that Ronald Reagan was knowledgeable on the issues that he got up and debated about. And he always said we need tight security so people won't take documents out of the government, out of the National Security Council. Yet people from the National Security Council and people in the government were supplying him with information and coaching him by the minute down in the basement. Gene Kirkpatrick and George Will and various people were coaching him on how to answer questions, and he was given an equal chance to get up in front of people and know the answers to things that he wouldn't have known otherwise. And that is really unfair, because if he's not knowledgeable on these things, we should know. At the time of William Clark's hearings for National Security Chief, he couldn't answer questions about countries, the presidents, the locations of countries, the vice presidents, and yet he is totally directing the war in Central America and as many other places as he can. He has interests that go back to Reinhard Gehlen and the German Gehlen Nazi organization and counterintelligence in Europe before he even became a bigwig in helping Ronald Reagan in California. He was in military counterintelligence. And counterintelligence involves lies and telling stories and taking things from people or planting evidence. And as a spy, he's done his work well. He doesn't have to know the countries. All he knows is that communism is bad and anything that's anti-communist is okay. And if the president is more anti-communist than the candidate, who was the current president at the time, anything is right to get him into power. This is the thinking of the intelligence community, and that's the way it operates. There's no honor among thieves, and that's how Ronald Reagan made his image look good at the time of the election. Incidentally, if you just turned in now and you're expecting calls from Abe Brussel, we're not taking the talk show tonight. The monitor here is broken. We're even lucky to be able to be on the air without a hum. It may begin, the hum may begin in a little while. Right now it isn't humming, It's lucky it was on this afternoon, and when I came in the studio, it was terrible. So it lives a loud buzz if we turn the switch on the board up to the phone, and it's impossible. You take the phone off the hook, there's a terrible noise. So write down your questions. Don't call the house, because we'll share them on the air, and we'll do it next week. In the meanwhile, I'll talk with you about a few of the items that are in the news that are of interest or should be to you. The Civil Liberties Union in Los Angeles has obtained 180 boxes from the Los Angeles Police Department that were taken from J. Paul in the police department to a garage in Long Beach into a $100,000 computer belonging to Larry McDonald and Roy Cohn and Admiral Moore, to the military, to the Assassination Incorporated headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, to the mob syndicate tied in with Roy Cohn. These pieces of information that were supposed to be destroyed 10 years ago are still existing, and J. Paul works with John Reese, whose wife ran the House Un-American Activities at the time that Senator Joe McCarthy was there. Oh, my. This is what I'm... Let's see if we can switch this off. This is the humming we had before. If it comes back on during World Watchers, I'll continue the broadcast. If you can stand the hum, if you can't stand it, we'll do the best we can and hope it doesn't get louder. There is that scratching hum that was off for a little while. Now that we're getting ready with World Watchers, it's back on. We'll see what we can do about it. But unfortunately, this is the sound that we had, and I'll switch it. Oh, it's back on. Now you believe me, don't you? It isn't that I didn't want the calls. It was that this sound is on, and it gets louder. So I will do the one-hour program starting from 8 to 9. If you can stand the noise, my luck ran out with the sound. But I will redo the broadcast and have tapes available if you want to get it without the sound, if you collect these. Some people tape them off the air and then send me self-addressed stamped envelopes, and I send the bibliography if you want that. If you want information on the broadcast, if you miss one or if the power is off, you can write to me, Mae Brussel, and you can write P.O. Box 939, the zip code is 93922, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922. So if you collect these broadcasts, a lot of people tape them off the air, and if they miss one or if the box is off or the studio is off, then they order the tape. Make them. The tape center makes them and duplicates them here in Pacific Grove. So I'm not responsible for the business of that. I don't sell anything, and that way I can keep the research at a different level, because I'm not trying to sell cassettes to you. That's not my business, and my business is to do research and find out facts and information that are of interest to you. I hope that my luck will be on and we can get this handled. If not, and if you can stand that hum during the next hour, this is what we're going to have to live with. I can't kick the box anymore. I did it before, and now it's being very naughty. There's a new book out by two of the largest disinformation counterintelligence spies there are. One is Robert Moss, who works for Newsweek and is in London, and the other is Arnaud, A-R-N-A-U-D, de Borchgrave. They wrote The Spike, and they work with Michael Ledeen, and they work with Alexander Haig, and everything they do is violently anti-Soviet propaganda. They were the authors of The Spike, and they have a new book out called Monimbo, M-O-N-I-M-B-O, and the advertisement praising it and selling the book is by Henry Kissinger, of course. That team. Henry Kissinger is the person praising the book or trying to sell it to you, and he works with Michael Ledeen of counterintelligence and Claire Sterling, and wrote the terror network of disinformation about the KGB, leaving out the real terror network of the Nazis and the Mafia and the Central Intelligence Agency. So Henry Kissinger's name is on this book, and he always has been a far right. When he was confirmed for this new committee to investigate Central America, the argument of the right wing was he's too liberal, knowing all along that there's nothing liberal about Henry Kissinger, not a finger in his body. So he's selling that book for them, of course. And there's another article I put under the category of Terror on the Right, a survival shop written about in the San Francisco Examiner yesterday, but there are many of them all over the country. And this is run by Mike Pratt, who was involved with the Posse Comitatus and the right-wing church organizations that I did a broadcast or several broadcasts on a few weeks ago. They sell $25,000 a month in knives and guns, ammunition and masks. Oh my. And grenades, and they have stores all over the country. They sell, of course, magazines like Gung Ho, Soldier of Fortune, and they build homes like fortresses. They store food, equipment. This is an article on survival shops, a boom business. They're ready for doomsday. One of the main head. I don't know. Can you stand that sound for an hour while we do World Watchers? I hope so. Maybe it'll go off. As I say, I don't know how to kick it anymore. It was behaving very nicely. Maybe it's a conspiracy. It's being jammed, okay? So we can't get on the air. I remember one night when I was over at Kip years ago, we went off the air, and it was Sunday night when I went in, and the tower wasn't working, and they investigated, and somebody had shot a .22 into the tower in some way, and it was off the air that Sunday night. And from time to time, there were mishaps that, if one were paranoid, you'd think they were timed to happen this way. Remember I was talking about the fellow last week who didn't like World Watchers, and I told him to turn it off for an hour, but, well, maybe at the end of the hour. No, it wasn't working during the day. We'll see how bad it is. I don't know what to do about it. I'm not a mechanic, and I don't know what your tolerance is, what you're getting on your station with your ears. If it continues, I don't know. I hate the sequence of World Watchers goes every week. One week follows another week in news, and I hate to deprive you of 1 hour. If it worse gets to worse, I'll put on some music, because it seems that the music, when we turn off the main mic, it does not interfere with the music. It's just the talking that's being affected tonight. So if it gets too bad, I'll pull a record out for you. Or I have one here. I didn't even anticipate this because it was behaving very nicely. I'll put on an album that was here before and selected before I came in by Ned Roram and at the piano. And we'll put in some music for you on Kazoo. And I'll be disc jockey with some songs for an hour, because we can't have this, obviously. I'll swing the mic off. I don't know what to tell you. We can't have this. Your ears will break. Let me give it a couple of flicks with the main mic before we begin. It's just about 1 minute of, and see if we can do World Watchers tonight. I'll do the best I can, and if I break your ears, have a little patience. I'm sorry you'll miss a good one if there's too much static. All you can do is get the tape. I'll have to redo it later. Write to me, Mae Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922. We'll flip, but it's not sounding very healthy, is it? If it's at this low level, you're okay, and take your ears and wipe out the static, and we'll give it a try. But I'm sorry the telephones couldn't go through tonight, and maybe it'll be fixed by tomorrow, I hope. And if it gets too bad, oh, it's clear. Isn't that nice? We got 30 seconds to go, 15 seconds to go, and it's clear. Well, let's hope it stays clear for an hour. Wouldn't that be nice? Nap. No, something's on.
The views expressed by Mae Brussel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.